The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391.
The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock.
So Theresa May humiliated again in the Commons. This time, her withdrawal agreement was hammered by 149 votes. It means tonight, MPs will have the chance to vote against no deal happening. Then on Thursday, they could push for a possible extension to when we leave the EU. And now, the latest Brexit news. Irish goods entering Northern Ireland will not face tariffs in a no deal Brexit. But Northern Irish products entering the Republic could face tariffs. The details are contained in a new no-deal Brexit plan published by the government. Let's see if we can understand this with our business and economics editor, John Campbell. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. There will be a slight delay on the line because you're out and about on a satellite truck this morning.
But I am.
But John, explain this to me. Does that then mean that businesses in Northern Ireland trying to export, their goods will be less competitive? In other words, there could be tariff on their goods than people importing into us?
That is certainly a real possibility, that we don't know for that for certain at the moment, because what we have an announcement today is just the British government explaining what it will do on its side of the border. What we don't have is the Republic and the EU explaining what will happen on their side of the border. So firstly, what is the British government proposing? Well, they're saying they are sticking to their plan that there will be no new checks, controls, infrastructure or anything else on the border as a result of no deal. And the most eye-catching part of that comes around customs. So generally the way customs work is you're collecting tariffs. You're collecting what are effectively import taxes. But the UK government today has announced a whole range of tariffs it's going to impose on goods coming from all over the world. However, it is not going to impose any tariffs at all on goods coming from the Republic into Northern Ireland. However, if a company from the Republic is selling into Great Britain, it would face tariffs. So let's just think that through. You could be a food producer in Dundalk, you could ship your goods up to Newry and you wouldn't face any tariffs. But you could then ship your goods from Dundalk over to London, Manchester, Glasgow, and you would have to pay tariffs. So that's pretty extraordinary what's been proposed here.
But does that not mean that businesses here in Northern Ireland, employing people here in Northern Ireland, are going to find it tough? They're going to be less competitive, surely?
Well, there could be this situation. I think it really depends on what the EU and the Republic do, because if the EU, as I think is quite likely, would say, in a no-deal scenario, we are just going to apply all our usual tariffs to the UK, all our usual non-member tariffs, you would have a situation where goods going from Newry to Dundalk would face tariffs, in some cases quite high tariffs, but goods coming from Dundalk to Newry would not face tariffs. So if that is the situation that we end up in, then yes, that does have an implication for Northern Ireland businesses. And the government is pretty upfront about that this morning. They say they recognise that businesses and farmers here will have concerns about the impact of this approach on their competitiveness. However, they say these are the only steps the UK government can unilaterally take to deliver on the absolute commitment to avoid a hard border in the event of no deal. So basically they're saying when it comes to the border, we're not going to be doing anything. We're certainly not going to be charging tariffs or collecting tariffs on stuff from the south.
Let's have a listen to what Nigel Dodds told Good Morning Ulster this morning, the DUP's Nigel Dodds, about this.
What we are very clear about is that we don't want a hard border in the island of Ireland. So the government is saying that they will not take steps to do that. Michelle Barnier also has said that in the event of a no deal, then there won't be any checks on the border. It will be done operationally away from the border. So, you know, clearly there's no need for the Irish Republic to introduce these checks if they don't want to. And so far their planning hasn't included that, but we will wait and see. And likewise on the issue of tariffs, the government is saying on that that there will be tariffs into the rest of the UK, but not for Northern Ireland.
Seamus Leahy,
Let me just finish this point. And if the Republic and the EU don't reciprocate on that, then clearly the government will have to look at that. This is an offer by the government to try to avoid problems. But if it's not reciprocated either in terms of hard border infrastructure or in tariffs for Northern Ireland going into the south, then clearly the government will have to look at that.
Two things on that, John. First of all, whatever happened to the DUP insisting on the same status for Northern Ireland as the rest of the UK? Would that not make us different than the rest of the UK if the Irish government did reciprocate?
Oh, certainly, under this plan, we would be different from the rest of the UK when it comes to trade with the Republic of Ireland. Because, as I've explained there, goods coming from Dundalk to Newry would not face tariffs, but goods going from Dundalk to Holyhead would face tariffs. So, yeah, it's objectively, under this plan, Northern Ireland would be different.
I thought the whole argument starts to raise another question about the
treatment of Northern Ireland.
I thought the whole argument, John, from the DUP was they didn't want Northern Ireland to be different than the rest of the UK in terms of our trading status.
They don't. And certainly, I think the other issue then which we come on to is what happens if businesses in the Republic try to use Northern Ireland as a backdoor to get into the rest of the UK without paying tariffs? Because remember, if you were sending your goods direct from Dundalk to Holyhead, then you would have to pay a tariff. But if you go through Northern Ireland, you wouldn't. So there's clearly going to be an incentive there for people, say, to drive their goods up over the border, relabel them, or maybe not even bother relabeling them, and ship them over into Scotland, and then they've avoided the tariff they would otherwise pay. So then you get to ask, well, does the government see that smuggling, potential smuggling, as a risk, and what are they going to do about it? And yes, they do acknowledge that there's a risk that businesses in the Republic could try to use Northern Ireland as a back door. But when they come to enforcing it, they're saying there would not be any new routine checks or controls at the Irish Sea ports in terms of Northern Ireland goods. If there was smuggling, they would try to tackle it through a risk-based, intelligence-led approach. So I think certainly what some people have been saying to me this morning is, hold on a moment, if this situation was to happen, we'd end up with this at Irish Sea border anyway, if you wanted to make sure there was no smuggling coming from Northern Ireland through the Republic from Northern Ireland into GB. This morning, customs officials are saying, no, we wouldn't intend to harden the sea border either. But let's see exactly how they would deal with that.
I saw you tweeting just finally last night that this was an honesty box scenario. What did you mean?
Well, actually, things have moved beyond that, because the guidance I had last night is, listen, they're not going to enforce anything at the border, and if businesses from the Republic are trading across that border, they'll just have to self-report. The people that they're selling to, the importers, they would self-report, and that's how the tariff would be collected. But to my surprise this morning, I went even beyond that to say the way we deal with tariffs, collecting tariffs on the border, is just not to have them at all. We just have no tariffs on goods coming from the Republic. And that it does raise a question, and this is a slightly technical point. Can the UK, as a member of the World Trade Organization, actually do this? Because when you're in the World Trade Organization, which is like, you know, basically the bottom line for how you trade with everybody else in the world, you're not supposed to discriminate. If you have zero tariffs for one member, you're supposed to have zero tariffs for everybody else. But in this case, the UK is clearly discriminating. They're saying, we're having zero tariffs for any goods coming from the Republic into our territory in Northern Ireland, but people in elsewhere in the world, they will have to be charged some tariffs. So I was asking about this morning, and the government seems confident that they will be able to use a loophole to get around that. But it does raise this important point: is will the government even be able to go through with this for more than a very short term basis?
John Campbell, thank you very much indeed. I think there are lots of questions around this this morning. So Theresa May's deal rejected, emphatically rejected by 149 votes. She was slaughtered last night in the House of Commons over this. So what do you think should happen next? Do you think that there should be a no-deal Brexit? Do you think there should be another referendum? And then now, all of a sudden, different rules for Northern Ireland than the rest of the UK. 03030 80 55 55. After 2 years of thinking and agonising over how they could work out this conundrum, the British government has now come up with the scenario: let's do nothing. Let's charge no tariffs whatsoever, without the guarantee that will come back from the Republic of Ireland. So we might be charged, and they won't. Is that what the biggest minds in the country have come up with? 03030 80 55 55. The text 81771. The email nolan@bbc.co.uk. Let's just remind ourselves of just how busy the last 48 hours have been.
Having an insurance policy to guarantee that there will never be a hard border in Northern Ireland is absolutely right. The deal that MPs voted on in January was not strong enough in making that clear, and legally binding changes were needed to set that right. Today, we have agreed them.
What this document does is address the risk that we could be kept in the backstop by the bad faith and deliberate manipulation of the Union.
Now is the time to come together, to back this improved Brexit deal, and to deliver on the instruction of the British people.
The legal risk, as I set it out in my letter of the 13th of November, remains unchanged.
The backstop is the bottom line. From what the Attorney General is saying today, provided there is no bad faith, the fact is that Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom could be trapped if it's a question that the EU does not agree with the United Kingdom to a superseding agreement.
The DUP and the European Research Group just delivered a knockout blow to Mrs. May's deal, because in the past half hour, the ERG's lawyers have gone over the agreements reached by Mrs. May last night and concluded that they're not good enough.
The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391.
So the noes have it, the noes have it. Unlock!
The government has been defeated again by an enormous majority, and they must now accept their deal, their proposal, the one the Prime Minister has put, is clearly dead and does not have the support of this House.
I profoundly regret the decision that this House has taken tonight. I continue to believe that by far the best outcome is that the United Kingdom leaves the European Union in an orderly fashion with a deal. And that the deal we've negotiated is the best and indeed the only deal available.
Pretty much anything can happen when it comes to Brexit. You could be heading towards a much softer Brexit. You could be heading towards leaving without any deal. You could even be heading towards another referendum.
Zero 03030 80 55 55. The commentators Nelson McCausland and Jane Morris with us this morning. Nelson, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jane Morris. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nelson. Do you think a no deal, that's what's been voted today in the House of Commons, do you think that would be good for this country?
Well, certainly it would be extremely unwise for Parliament to remove the option of no deal. That's why Theresa May said a long time ago that no deal was better than a bad deal. You need to keep the no deal option on the table. Otherwise, the EU will simply say, we can offer them anything we want and they will accept it automatically. We can make it as difficult, as problematic, as awkward as possible, and they will accept it. That's the result, that's the corollary of saying we would remove no deal off the table. So it should certainly not be removed, although I suspect that when it comes to Parliament today, there will be a majority who want to remove it.
If we did have a no deal in this country, do you concede, Nelson, that that would send an economic shock through the economy and that it would damage the prospects for employability and prosperity in the short term?
Certainly, if there was a withdrawal from the EU on the basis of the World Trade Organization rules, which is sometimes referred to then as a no-deal Brexit. In that situation, there is bound to be some impact in the short term. But the
negative impact? Negative?
Well, certainly there will be some difficulties offered us at the start. But I think the long-term gains will be much greater.
And what type of difficulties at the start, Nelson?
I think it's impossible for anyone to predict this. It's very difficult to predict the political implications from one day to the next. It's very difficult to know what the economic implications could be.
And I was just looking last night at something. 20 years ago, we were talking about joining the euro. We were joining the eurozone. It would be the most wonderful thing for the UK. And the very same people who are raising all sorts of issues now, the CBI, the Financial Times, the International Monetary Fund, they were all saying, you've got to join the euro. Various politicians said it. And then they were all proved wrong. So making predictions in all of these areas is very, very difficult.
Jane Morris?
You asked at the top of the programme, you asked about this crisis and is there a way to avoid the crisis? And there is a way to avoid it. And it's relatively simple. First, today's vote, the vote goes that there is they agree to stop a no-deal option. Second, tomorrow's vote, they vote to extend the Article 50 deadline for at least a year. And then third, within that year, we hold a people's vote, if you want to call it, but I would say hold a referendum. And that would have three choices, deal, no deal, or remain. If we can work out a logical way forward in calm and in constructive manner, that is the way to approach this.
What are you going to do if people vote again for Brexit?
Because first of all, if I think about it, in a referendum, you've got three choices. So therefore, you have a compromise, a consensus among the whole of the UK. So whatever people vote for in that is acceptable to the whole of the UK.
Yeah, but what's the deal going to be then?
But if we've got a year to negotiate...
We've had 2 years.
No, well, I'm saying a year. I think it should be at least a year.
But we've had 2 years already.
Yes, we've had 2 years already and the government hasn't succeeded.
So what's the point of doing another year? What's going to be any different?
By the way, the reason why we need that is because if we're looking for an extension, we've got to have a reason for the extension. And that, in a people's vote, is a very valuable reason for an extension, which I am convinced the EU would accept. So that's the way it has to be. Otherwise, it's cliff edge on the 1st of April. And funny, it should be the 1st of April because, and by the way, can I just say here that I believe the media are not asking the right questions. This no-deal scenario the government said talks all about trade. What about people? What about farmers? I want to know what happens to the checks that come from Brussels on the 1st of April. Why are you not asking those questions?
What checks?
Farmers get over half, I was corrected correctly, it's over half their paychecks come from Brussels under the Common Agricultural Policy. I want to know what happens to those paychecks on April 1st if there's a no deal. Why are you not asking people that question?
Do you know the answer to that, Nelson?
Are you asking me?
Nelson McCausland, do you know what would happen in a no deal scenario? So we'd be out at the end of this month. Jane's question is a fair one. On behalf of farmers in this country, would they get their cheques beginning of April?
Well, I'm not an expert at all in farmers' cheques. I don't know whether they're looking into the future or whether they're retrospective. That would obviously have an impact on it. And it's an issue that I have to confess, I have no specialism in whatsoever. However, in the
but the farming period, the farming yes, community, indeed. Let me just elaborate on the question.
Absolutely.
Then.
I understand the question. Yes.
The farming community is an integral part of our community in Northern Ireland. It is also quite a strong base for the DUP. Has there been long-term thinking into what would happen to farmers? So let's take the year, because I understand what you're saying, does it apply to the previous month or the following month? So let's take the year, April 19 to April 2020, the next year in other words. What would happen to the farmers' cheques that they were otherwise getting from the EU before a no deal?
Well, of course, the situation moving forward is that instead of paying so much money into the EU, more of our money would be retained at Westminster and would therefore come from Westminster to whatever it be, whether it be grants or whatever nature, whether it be farming business or whatever, instead of being taken through Europe and having Europe subtract from it.
And is that guaranteed to the farmers? Has that been nailed down?
Well, I'm sure that the farmers' representatives have been talking to the government about the future plans in that regard. I would assume so. I would say this, but I think farmers' views on the EU are as mixed as anyone else, because Northern Ireland, just like the rest of the UK, is quite divided on the issue. And I've talked to a lot of farmers at meetings in the country where people are very strongly in favour of leaving the EU. There will be other farmers who take a different view.
Go on, Jen.
I will say yes. The UK government, I understand, did guarantee that they would supplement the farmers' checks until 2020. That's as far as I understand, but I don't understand why that guarantee isn't written into this no-deal scenario that the government has put out this morning. You know, why are they not? They're focusing on trade, and that's fair dues, but there's people, actual people, involved in this. And, you know, what are the government still going to guarantee the farmers that they will supplement the subsidies they get from Brussels? And is it only till 2020? These are questions that I cannot understand why people are not asking. I think there's been far, far too much focus on trade and the borders and stuff that the experts understand far better than we, the people, do. So why not just focus on people? What happens from people crossing the borders? You know, okay, we can talk about milk, we can talk about pigs and lambs, and that's very important. But what about people? What happens to...
There is a common travel area.
Yeah, is that common travel area also for continental EU nationals? What happens to the Polish and the Romanians and the Lithuanians? Are they stopped at the border? And what happens there? Are they in? I just don't know the answers to these questions. I'll admit I am an expert on European affairs, but I don't know the answers. And I think the media needs to ask these much more forcibly. Concentrating on trade is well enough, but what about the rest of us?
I think the other point that has been made by Jane earlier there is significant, where she talks about a number of things that should happen in terms of extending the period for another year or two and then having a second referendum. My view is that that would be extremely damaging to democracy. 17.4 million people voted to leave the EU. And that vote should be respected. Those who are calling for a second referendum are generally, almost entirely those who were Remainers, who lost in the first referendum and now want to rerun it and rerun it until they get to the point where they get the results that they wanted. Our problem here at the moment in all of this is that you have people and Parliament at variance. You have a people who voted in favour of leaving the EU.
Not Northern Ireland, they didn't.
I appreciate that, but this was a UK-wide vote. We have a UK-wide vote where the majority of people who voted to leave the EU. You have a Parliament where possibly 500 out of the 600 MPs were Remainers. And if you don't have a Parliament that has a will, a commitment, a belief in leaving the EU, you get into the situation where we're in, where the situation is exploited, the will of the people is subverted. And I think that's deeply damaging to democracy and will create huge resentment up and down the country.
And yet, Nelson, the party that you used to be part of, the DUP, used petitions of concern to frustrate the majority in Stormont, as did other parties. But if we look at Northern Ireland, a majority vote, the DUP and other parties didn't go with the majority vote and were quite frank about it, quite open about it, and said they were using the petition of concern to frustrate the majority vote.
And here in Northern Ireland, we have had for a long time a very unusual system of devolved democracy, with mandatory coalitions and all sorts of rules built in, of which the petition of concern was one.
Yeah, but the principle, it's not about the petition of concern. The principle is that your former party and other parties here in Northern Ireland, they haven't gone with the majority vote. So how can you argue the majority vote now?
All I'm simply saying is 17.4 million people across the United Kingdom voted to leave. Parliament has tried in various ways to support that. If they succeed, well, they succeed, but there will be a price to pay. There will be huge...
Can I come in there?
Yes.
17.4% of the UK population, it represents 37% of the total...
17.4 million, you mean?
17.4 million, represents 37%. And that is only 37% of the total UK population.
One of the biggest turnouts in a democratic process ever.
Absolutely. So when we have a second people's vote or a referendum, I'm pretty sure there'll be an even bigger turnout because there's so many young people who are facing such changes to their lives as a result of this, and they couldn't vote in that, and now they're eligible. And it'll be 4 years since the last referendum, if it's in a year's time, and that will be time to look at more detail at the deals that are on offer. And we all must admit, and again I go back to the fact that I didn't know what coming out of the EU was going to mean. And so therefore, the Remainers, a lot of us voted for the status quo. And that's something we could understand. The other we didn't know. Now, in a year's time, we will know what it is. It's not about damaging democracy. It's about promoting democracy and asking again and asking people more.
Asking again until you get the answer you want.
No, if it's a referendum, it's a compromise. So that is whatever comes out of it will work.
That's it. We're saying at home this morning. Charlie and Carador. Morning, Charlie.
Stephen, morning. I personally think it's a masterstroke by the British government there. I don't think anybody saw this coming. But
what's a masterstroke?
That no tariffs and trade coming across the border from the south there or Czechs. Because, Stephen, it does this. It shows that they're trying. They're trying under difficult circumstances. They're trying to get this right under threat of Sinn Féin IRA violence. On the upsurge again.
Well, there is no threat whatsoever from Sinn Féin, and they would say that they participate in the democratic process, and they would say they fully support the police. There is no threat from Sinn Féin.
Of course they do, Stephen, but we all know different. But
no, that's inaccurate.
No, it's not.
Do you want to talk about Brexit this morning?
Yes. Yep. The other thing is, Stephen, this puts the ball back in Europe's court. They have to reciprocate over this and show their goodwill intent, because up until now, they've been dealing in bad faith. They've been awkward and difficult. And let's see what Europe does over this. Let's see what Leo Varadkar is told what to say by his European puppet masters. This is brilliant by the British government. First class.
So Jane Morris has been pushing for yet another vote. She didn't like the result of the first one, so now she wants another vote, 0-30-30-80-55-55. In other words, another referendum. Peter is in Banbridge. Morning to you, Peter.
Hello, Stephen. How are you doing?
Go ahead, Peter.
I have a couple of questions for Nelson. I would like more than the usual 30 seconds you give me, if possible. No, does Nelson tell, does he want a border across Ireland?
Does he want a border across Ireland?
Yes. That's for Nelson, not you.
There is a border across Ireland because yes. Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. The Irish Republic is not. So there is a border there. It's a political border.
An operational border.
I think he means a hard border.
No, and quite clearly, the point that's been made by the UK government is this morning, their announcement, is designed to avoid a hard border, as it's sometimes described. And the question which Nigel Dodds then asked was, would the Dublin government reciprocate? Because they've said they won't erect any checks at the border. The UK government has said they won't erect any checks at the border. So there wouldn't be any checks at the border because nobody else could erect them.
Do you believe in partition?
I think it's a reality that the Irish Republic almost 100 years ago decided to leave the United Kingdom.
What's your point, Peter? How is this about Brexit?
You can't operate partition without a border. Without a hard border.
No, we have partition today, but there's no hard border.
And you're completely wrong. It was Britain partitioned Ireland.
Are we going to talk about Brexit?
Ireland didn't partition themselves.
Peter, thank you. The Belgium MEP for the European Conservatives and Reformist Group, Mark, Demis Marker, is with us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. So where are we at? How do you think the EU views this? I see Michel Barnier today is saying Theresa May's deal, the UK could still go for that if that's how the UK wants to leave in an orderly manner. This is what he's saying this
that's
morning.
That's what he said, yes, because we're having a debate right now in Strasbourg. I'm in Strasbourg where we're having plenary sessions, and there is a debate at this very moment going on the latest developments, and that's indeed what he said. The deal is there. It has been negotiated for a year and a half or something like that, and this is what is what's on the table, and this is what we all agreed on. And unfortunately, of course, we're seeing what we're seeing now in Westminster.
So what do you think? Do you think there's going to be a no-deal Brexit? And what impact, if there were a no-deal Brexit, do you think that would have, not just on the UK, but on the EU? You know, we trade to you.
It would be devastating, really. We would be very hard hit here in my own country, Flanders, which would, I think, be second hardest hit after Ireland, after the Republic. With our companies and businesses very hard hit and jobs on stake, really, it would be a disaster. And of course, we are preparing, and our businesses are preparing for that. But we hope to avoid. We hope to avoid it anyway.
So maybe, Mark, maybe the EU should be much more flexible. Maybe you're hurting yourselves.
But you can't blame the EU for sticking together to protect, of course, our single market and the customs union and for protecting our interests.
All right, look, the line's unbearable, I'm afraid. Nick and Lisburn, morning to you, Nick.
Morning, Stephen. Yeah, a couple of points just on the no tariffs across the border into Northern Ireland. I'm pretty sure that would be against WTO rules because it seems to me highly unlikely that the WTO would allow a country to treat one part of its territory from a tariff and customs point of view differently from another part of its territory. And that's my first point. But actually, that's a little bit of a minor point because the major point is that the UK has just unilaterally said we are not going to charge tariffs on 87% of the goods that we are going to import. So why would any country in the world, you know, who's going to do a trade deal with us want to give us good terms? They can already sell almost everything they want into the UK. I mean,
I don't understand this. You know more about this than I do. So tell me what you're talking about.
Well, what we have said is we're not going to charge. If we go to country X and say, right, we want to do a trade deal with you, country X is going to say, right, okay, you know, we want to sell you our widgets. What will you give us in return? And what the UK have basically just said is you can sell us our widgets anyway. So there's no leverage for the UK to achieve a good trade deal. That country will just turn around and go, if you want to sell us whatever it is you want to sell us, we're going to apply 50% tariffs to it. You know, it does away with all the leverage that you have as a trading nation by allowing people to sell you stuff with no barriers. Nelson, would he like to comment on that? Or John, if he's still there?
Nelson?
Sorry, as John said earlier, I think there's a lot of things we don't know in the light of this morning's announcement. And the first question, of course, is, will the Republic reciprocate? What are the implications? Can it be done? There was reference to a loophole in WTO rules. I don't know what the loophole is or who's referring to it. There is so much that is unknown until it's properly interrogated. I don't think anyone really understands fully.
I was just going to say, actually, Nelson had made a comment earlier on, and he said, you know, in the long run, he thought the UK would benefit overall, but as Keane said, in the long run, we're all dead. So, you know, it could be, and you know, Moog said it could be 50 years before we see the benefit. I just can't see the point of leaving. It just seems pointless.
Tony Lloyd's joining us this morning, Labour's Northern Ireland Shadow Secretary of State. Good morning to you, Tony.
And good morning to you.
Good morning. How come when Jeremy Corbyn stood up yesterday at the dispatch box, he didn't mention Labour's policy of another referendum very much, if at all?
Well, because Labour's always been clear that there is a sequence to what we've said. That what we're trying to achieve, Stephen, is something very important across the island of Ireland, which is that there should be no hard border. Now, whatever happens, that means that we've got to be part of a customs agreement. We've got to be part to make sure we've got single market accessibility. With that kind of approach, we've then got to say, how do we build a majority in the House of Commons? And I don't know where the majority lies, and nor, frankly, does anybody, until we get to the point of testing it out. And the only way we can test it out is to go through this week, yes, to defeat the Theresa May's really bad deal yesterday, to take no deal off the table today. Sadly, the way she's run the clock down means it's inevitable. We will have to ask for more time from the EU. But we've then got to get into the sort of hard parliamentary questions of building that majority for something that takes the whole of this country of ours forward in its relationship with the EU.
So how much
with the rest of the world?
How much of an extension does Labour want from the EU?
That's actually quite difficult to say, and that really is difficult, partly because it will be Theresa May who puts down the motion on Thursday.
No, but Labour is saying, because you want the general election, so you're saying you're a party ready for government. So here we have this vote on you know, possibly if today is lost, and it's likely it will, the no deal will lose.
Yeah.
So tomorrow we have the prospect of Parliament being asked to vote for an extension. Surely to goodness, Labour have formulated a policy in their own head about how long they feel that extension should be.
Yes, of course. But the reality is we'll need to table that and gain the support of colleagues in Parliament. The important thing at the moment, to be honest, the general election doesn't lie in Labour's hands. General election would only be called if two-thirds of members of Parliament were to vote for it. What we've got to do is to move, as Jeremy Corbyn said in the Commons yesterday, first of all, onto the terrain of testing the Commons to see whether there is a majority for that customs agreement, single market approach. And if that wins, of course, we move forward. That will give a very clear negotiating mandate to the Prime Minister, or if the Prime Minister is not there, to whoever replaces her. But in the end, the next step has got to establish where the majority lies in Parliament. Now, we are not the majority party.
It means
Conservative MPs reaching out to us and vice versa.
When is Labour going to start campaigning, as your conference promised to do, for another referendum?
Well, as and when we establish what the majority is in Parliament, and that will have to be sequential.
But that's not consistent, Tony, with the promises you made. Your party made a promise that if you didn't get a general election, you would campaign for another referendum.
And we actually said we'd campaign for the customs agreement single market standards, and we'd keep the second referendum there, and we've not taken either of those off. What we've got to find out, there is no inconsistency. If you just listen back to what I said a few moments ago in saying this, we're not the majority in Parliament. The only way forward is to build a majority across Parliament. That means MPs from other parties, other opposition parties, but from the government party as well, reaching out to us and us to them to see where that majority lies. If we can do that, then we can move the nation forward. We've got to do that now very quickly.
You're the Northern Ireland Shadow Secretary of State. Do you agree with the government's solution announced today that in the event of a no-deal Brexit, no tariffs would be charged?
That would be absolute madness, because in fact what the...
For across the border.
What the small print is saying is no tariffs one direction, tariffs in the other direction. But still the issue of single market discontinuity. So we'd end up with checks across the island of Ireland. We'd end up with the potential return to that hard border, and that's something that we've got to rule out, which is why I will be running through with alacrity to defeat a no-deal Brexit today.
So
it's really important for Northern Ireland.
So hold on a second. So you think that the Irish government would erect checks at the border?
I'm not sure the Irish government would be given the choice by the rest of the European Union. But in any case, let's not even test that hypothetical proposition. Let's make sure that we defeat the no-deal Brexit today, because in the end, making sure there's no return to any form of control across the border is fundamental. There's very few people in the Isle of Ireland, very few people who understand the situation in Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom who could even in conscience think about going there. So a no-deal Brexit's got to be taken off the table today and simply put that one to bed and move forward with finding where the majority is for a deal that works.
Tony Lloyd, thank you very much. Here's Diane and Dunmurrig. Morning, Diane.
Morning, Stephen. I just want to say, as the previous speaker referred, would farmers get their checks? All I want to say
we believe those checks are guaranteed, by the way, until for the duration of 2020.
Oh,
the question is, what happens after that?
after that. Well, it's not that far away, really. It's 2019 now. Well, the agri-food business is a huge part of the economy of Northern Ireland. And let's never forget, people here voted to stay in the European Union. The majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to stay in. I can't imagine anything upsetting a huge part of our economy. It could only be bad for Northern Ireland. Agri-food business is a huge part of the economy here. Possibly tourism is next. I'm not quite sure.
Nelson McCausland has argued this morning all of that money that we're sending to the EU, the British government will have that and they'll send some to us.
Well, that's not really set in concrete, is it? Because according to the lawyer, the chief attorney in Great Britain, the money has to be paid. This huge sum of money has to be paid if they want to leave the European Union. So you don't know who to believe, really, do you? It's all sort of up in the air at the moment, isn't it? This leaving with no deal.
Are you worried?
All I know is I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen.
Dan, thank you. Brian and Lambeg. Morning, Brian.
Hi, Stephen. It's just interesting. Whenever Jane brought up the idea of a fresh referendum, Nelson was guilty of running out the old adage, just the Remainers. They just want to keep voting until they get what they want. Well, that's not actually true, because in the initial referendum, the only information that the public got were smoke and mirrors from both sides. We didn't get any real, true idea of what it means. We now have a 550-page document that sets out exactly what it means, and we have all the government's documents on every industry of what the problems will be when we leave the EU. So it is a fresh referendum on the information we now have. If it's democratic for the Parliament to vote twice on the same leave proposal, it's democratic for the people to vote on what the information is presently.
Thank you very much. 0303 80 55 55. The leader of the Alliance Party, Naomi Long. Good morning to you, Naomi.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Daniel McCrossan, the SDLP MLA. Good morning to you, Daniel.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, Naomi, is this not a masterstroke by the British government saying, we ain't going to erect any border checks, we ain't going to choose any tariffs? And does that not, Naomi, put pressure on the Irish government? What are they going to do? Are they seriously going to erect border checks?
Well, no, it isn't a masterstroke. It's a complete mess. And I think anyone rationally looking at what is being proposed would see that very clearly, Stephen. This is the outworking of 2.5 years of absolute chaos. And what it will lead to is a temporary solution, because what's proposed by the government can only be temporary, because it actually breaches WTO rules. And therefore, by the time the WTO, they're hoping they can get away with it long enough, simply to get something else in place, because the WTO will eventually say it's a breach of their rules to treat one place more favourably than another, and therefore it will have to stop. So, no, it's not a masterstroke. It's a mess.
Daniel?
Yeah, I agree with Naomi. It is an absolute mess. And I spent 45 minutes with Dolores Kelly speaking with the NAO officials this morning. And the line that they have taken is, we're not going to put up a border. And that seems to be the trend coming from pro-Brexiteers throughout. But people clearly know that the EU will force the hand of the Irish government in erecting a border here, because there's going to be some checks in the event of a no-deal Brexit. And this is the big concern that people have. People have been told today, well, we're not going to erect borders, we're not going to erect checks or any form of processes on the border. But in actual fact, they know full well it isn't going to be them, but it will force the hand of the EU, who will have an obligation, the Irish government will have an obligation to ensure there's checks there. This is very dangerous.
So the Irish government are going to put up border checks, Daniel?
They may not have a choice. This is the key point that people need to realise today. The British government are putting out a message that they want people to hear that it's not their responsibility, that they're not going to be putting up these checks or processes. But in actual fact, the EU could force the hand of the Irish government to ensure there's some checks on that border. The Irish government don't want that. Nobody wants that. But that may be the reality. And this no-deal scenario is a reckless position to be in, and a very dangerous one for the people of this island, both north and south. And the DUP know that. They're steering constantly against the greater interest, the business community of this place, the agri sector and our people. They're even steering against the interests of the people that they claim to represent. This is a ridiculous situation and a very dangerous one, Stephen. And people today...
What's dangerous about it?
And listen, here's the other thing.
What's dangerous about it, Daniel?
Stephen, just on this point, the information that has been released today in the documents by the Irish government have been held by the British government for the last number of months. That information could have been shared with the business community and the people of this island to ensure that they have contingency plans in place in the event of a no-deal Brexit scenario. That's the reality. They held this back simply because they felt it would compromise the negotiating position, even though they haven't had a new negotiating position since December. The clearest situation here is that the backstop is not for moving. And people need to realise out there, Stephen, they either accept the backstop at Westminster or there's not going to be a Brexit, because we're not going to return to any border or any customs post across this island whatsoever.
Naomi?
Well, I mean, Stephen, it is a mess because, for example, let's look even just at the simplest point of this today. This evening, Parliament are going to vote to take a no-deal Brexit off the table. But as Theresa May clearly and correctly stated last night, even if Parliament votes today to say that they're opposed to a no-deal Brexit, because they've already passed the repeal bill, there will be a no-deal Brexit anyway, because it's the only thing they've legislated for. So they can oppose a no-deal Brexit tonight, but unless they're able to legislate for something else in the interim, then a no-deal Brexit will happen anyway. So we are in now a completely farcical situation where there is limited time, where the solutions that are being proposed now are clearly temporary, ad hoc solutions, not comprehensive and sensible ways forward. Business can't plan on the basis of what they've heard today from the government. I mean, I've read through what has been planned by government, because it isn't a permanent situation. It's what government intends to do the day after Brexit. But there's no guarantee or estimation of how long that situation will last. And so the entire scenario we're dealing with here is one where we are going up to the edge of the cliff, looking over and deciding to jump anyway. Now, I think it is insanity, absolute insanity, that we are continuing to...
Missing one point. The people throughout the United Kingdom voted for this. They voted for Brexit.
People did not vote for this, Stephen. People voted for a Brexit that promised them the easiest deals that would ever be done. It would be the simplest negotiation in the history of negotiations. There would be money surplus for the health service. There would be it would all be green pastures and wealth and comfort. And now even the most ardent Brexiteers are saying, yes, the economy will take a hit. Yes, it is chaotic. And they are relying on trying to bully 27 other states into allowing them to go ahead with this absolutely half-cocked proposal and reciprocate it, even though it would break their rules, because they forget that other people have rules and that they adhere to them. So the entire premise of this has completely changed. And I think if you promise people something, Stephen, and it turns out not to be what you promised, the very least you can do is offer them the chance to revisit that decision. Yeah. That, to me, it's not just a democratic imperative, it's a moral imperative. What people are being offered now in terms of Brexit is nothing close to the Brexit I voted against in 2016. The Brexit I voted against in 2016 looks like a walk in the park compared to the Brexit that we're being offered now. And I think it's absolutely imperative at this stage that the Labour Party, the Liberal Democrats and others who are holding their cards close to their chest now step up to the plate and say, okay, we believe this is a bad idea. Let's give the people a vote on this, because it has changed unrecognisably since what they were promised.
Gareth Burns this morning. Good morning to you, Gareth.
Good morning, Stephen. I think the stage we're at now is to give the people a proper choice. What we had back in 2016 was a false choice, because obviously it is completely unworkable and Parliament is deadlocked now. So if it is not possible to have Jane Morris's triple choice in a referendum, then maybe what we need to do is to try and address something similar to what happened in the Republic of Ireland, because what they were looking at in the Republic of Ireland was the Treaty of Lisbon. But one of the best options available, which the Labour Party is quite keen on at the moment, is Common Market 2.0. So that is fairly similar to Norway Plus. So it really is at the point now where the people... Pardon?
There is no Norway Plus. If there was
I'm only saying that the Labour Party has the idea of Common Market 2.0, which is quite close to Norway Plus in some of its thinking.
But the EU won't give us that, because if there was Norway Plus, Norway would have Norway Plus. I mean, this idea that there's an exceptionalism to the UK and that we're going to get a better deal, that we're going to get Canada Plus Plus or Norway Plus,
I wasn't really wanting to go down that road. What I was really wanting to say is we have to give the people a true choice here, because they had a false choice choice last time round.
I agree. So, the true choice is Theresa May's deal, which is negotiated for two and a half years and no deal.
Let's let the people speak this morning. Robert and Carrickfergus, you have a question for Daniel McCrossan. Morning.
Yes. He made a statement there a moment ago, Stephen, that what Britain was doing by saying they're not putting a border up, that the EU would effectively be forced to make the Irish Republic put a border up. But the EU and the Irish Republic have told us for the last 2 years that they don't want a border. But yet he's saying that they're going to, Britain's saying they're not putting a border up is going to force them into putting one up. So where's the common ground there? I can't understand what he's on about.
Well, why don't you ask him? He's listening to you.
Well, I'm just saying it on air to him.
Well, my point very clearly is that I believe that the British government has been disingenuous today by putting out a line that we are not erecting a border or customs processes whatsoever on this island. That they know
what everybody's asked for.
They know full well that there will need to be some checks and balances in the event of a no-deal Brexit. And anyone that thinks otherwise is fooling themselves, which is why fundamentally it's absolutely vital that we get a deal here that's going to represent the best interests of the people.
Are you happy with that, Robert?
No, but it's not answering the question.
Hold on, what's your question, Robert?
The question is, go ahead, Naomi.
Yeah, if I can answer you, Robert, what everyone has said is they don't want to have a hard border. Yeah.
And Britain,
the reason they've had hold on. They've all said they don't want to have a hard border. But the reason they've had to say that is because the inevitable consequence of leaving the EU and not maintaining ourselves within the customs union is that you must have a hard border. It's required by the WTO, it's required by the EU. And ultimately, look at what they're talking about today, Robert. They're talking about creating this kind of Wild West Northern Ireland where anybody who wants to import through the Republic of Ireland will only be constrained by capacity. They'll not have to pay any duties and tariffs, but if they go to Dover, they will. Why would they go to Dover? Should they just fly in and come in through Rosslare and come to Northern Ireland and come through that route? So this is not a sustainable way forward. The government knows it. Anybody who's reading it knows it, Robert. And please, I'm begging people to understand this. Not wanting a hard border and avoiding having one are
very
two different things.
Yeah, very different.
Damien and Derry. Morning, Damien.
How are you doing, Stephen? Stephen, Naomi's basically covered everything I was just going to say to you there. People need to understand this. Like, under WTO rules, if the UK government was saying, right, we're not putting in place checks, we're not having tariffs and anything coming in, then they have to do the same for every single bit of import coming out of the UK.
John Campbell suggesting that the British government feel they've our business economics editor, John Campbell, suggesting the government think they've found a loophole to be able to get around that.
They haven't found anything in 2 years.
Right. No, seriously. You're not seriously going to take this government's word for anything at this stage.
Jim and Derry next. Morning, Jim.
Hello there. Morning to everybody. I just want a wee quick question. Can you make trade deals under WTO rules?
Well, yes, you can.
Okay, so making a trade deal between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic to allow goods to come through is a trade deal. So it is okay. So you aren't being truthful.
No, I am being truthful because you cannot make a deal with any EU state unless you make a deal with the EU. To make a deal with the EU, you got to have voted for what was there last night. Night, the withdrawal agreement, then you make your future arrangements. And if you don't make a deal with the whole of the EU, you can't make a deal with any of the EU.
All right. Naomi, thank you. Daniel, thank you. We're out of time, I'm afraid.